This is the Leaders Commute Podcast, brought to you by Acuity Business Consulting and produced by Business Radio X. I'm Jess Villegas. The Leaders Commute Podcast reflects on the dynamic of recalling past experiences that persistently return to us over the commute of our lives and prompt us to acknowledge their influence on how we think about business and leadership today. The commute theme is intentional. Past episodes have referred to what we've collected and delivered in our life's journey. Today's episode, High Noon, Full Moon, refers to what we have mapped and a perspective on how to engage unexpected detours. My guest today is Eric Pratum, COO of Big Wide Sky. Eric is going to indulge me as I relate today's episode and then help me reflect more deeply on the message that I hope to deliver well today. Welcome, Eric. Thanks for listening, and perhaps you're even doing so on your actual commute. Okay, it's 2021 and I'm hiking the Grand Canyon, but in 2004 I hiked it, sprained my ankle at the bottom near the Colorado River, and this is the spot where I think it happened, right here. So almost 10 miles from here to go up on a sprained ankle. Anyway, over and out. It was a bright, hot, blistering 117 degrees the day I severely twisted my ankle somewhere along the river at the bottom of the Grand Canyon. I recall the date clearly. It was an extremely cold Christmas Eve in 2003. Over the course of our long and enduring friendship, one approaching 50 years, Rick has made it his mission to ensure that asphalt and cement were not my only conduits to the earth. In our LA suburbanite, 20-something tight-knit group of faux adventurers, he alone had legitimate experience in the ways of hiking, hunting, fishing, boating, and camping. By virtue of taking many such trips with his father, Rick became the de facto leader of our most ambitious ideas for guys' trips involving the great outdoors. In the early years, our adventures were relatively sedate. A fishing trip here, some water skiing there, and day hikes in some of the most beautiful parts of the country. Things became more involved as we searched for more physically challenging opportunities. Ultimately, they took the form of long, difficult hikes and backpacking trips in and around the Rockies in the Southwest. These more intense trips served to cull our numbers, severing away would-be explorers unable to rationalize these greater physical efforts against the pull of family and careers. As the group got smaller and tighter, aspirations grew bolder, stirred in a chemistry of ego, adrenaline, and a genuine appreciation of the land. The demands of these trips went beyond the physical endurance necessary to complete them. Alternating excursions of mountain peaks and desert canyons educated us in the grandeur of these locations, but they also alerted us to the diverse dangers associated with not being well prepared. Training, studying the topography, understanding the weather, and having the right gear all require time and diligence. So, the decision to attempt a grueling one-day, 18-mile, middle-of-July hike to the bottom of the Grand Canyon and then back out was born of salutations with friends on Christmas Eve, 2003. The plan was to start at the south rim of the canyon and complete the South Kaibab Bright Angel Loop, which was an 8-mile descent and an 8-mile ascent separated by a 2-mile traverse along the banks of the Colorado River. Our training needed to account for some unusual circumstances. The South Rim elevation is approximately 7,000 feet. Until one gets used to it, breathing at this altitude is difficult. Thankfully, the higher altitude can bring reasonable relief from the heat. But even at 5 a.m., the temperature can approach 80 degrees. And it will increase by 20 to 25 degrees as you make the descent towards sea level. The experience is the inverse of a mountain hike. That is, moderate energy expended over many miles in the descent is rewarded with the extraordinary expending of energy over many miles to climb back out. Underlying all of this is water scarcity. Logistics need to account for how much to carry and where it can be replenished from either the occasional water fountain outpost or the Colorado River. Training regimens need to include strength training to carry provisions, extended distance runs for endurance, strenuous hikes to prepare leg muscles, and strategies for managing extreme heat. The proper nutrition required that every food selection and its associated weight have a payback for pushing the body past where it normally wants to go. Safety awareness was mostly about staying properly hydrated, but it also needed to account for things like a lack of shade, sunburn, blisters, broken shoelaces, and God forbid, possibilities of a snake bite. The ambiguity surrounding never having been to the Grand Canyon prompted a leveling up of every preparation choice. I was not sure what to expect the day of the hike. I was only sure of one thing. I had never been more prepared for anything in my life. We started the hike at 5 a.m. with the anticipation we would complete it by 3 p.m., about 10 hours in total. Things got off to a smooth start. We arrived at the river around 9 a.m. and took a 30-minute break to rest and replenish water. As we prepared to resume our trek, we spotted a dilapidated, scarecrow-like, heat-weathered structure with a note affixed to the top. It read, "Forecast, 117 degrees. This was more interesting than concerning, as all seemed to be going well, and we pressed on. The river stretch of the hike is the easiest because it is flat and provides a welcome break before the uphill climb. I knew my training was paying off because it felt like I was floating along the trail. My trekking poles seemed to be doing all the work, leaving me free to gaze up at the incredible shadows, colors, and contours of the majestic walls, and to consider my good fortune for being in a spectacular place with individuals I cared deeply about. The bottom of the canyon felt like the top of the world. But in an instant, my gaze went from majestic walls to brush and dust. While adjusting my pack, loaded down with water and salty snacks, I stepped awkwardly on a rock and began to tumble. My short stature means a fast trip to the ground, but I knew way before I landed I had severely sprained my right ankle. I was injured on the easiest and flattest part of the hike, and it felt like 6 months of preparation dissipated in just a couple of seconds. Disappointment gave way to high anxiety. We were still on the cooler side of high noon, but now every degree of heat felt like a gang of needles. My heart was racing, and I felt my ankle blowing up inside my boot. I tried to stay calm and consider my options. It turns out there are few. My friends seemed as helpless as I was to get past any ideas that did not include burros and helicopters, either in short supply or too expensive. I stood up, got my balance, and tested my pain threshold. I stared at the expanse of the bright blue sky, waiting for some inspiration or a miracle. Ultimately, it seemed the only thing to do was to start walking and see where things went. I tightened my boot to contain the swelling and started moving. A shift of weight on the heel of my foot mildly reduced the pain in my ankle. With every slow and agonizing step, I wondered how long it would take to complete what should have been the final 6 hours of the hike out of the canyon. The answer is 12. I exited at 8 p.m., 15 hours after we begun, just as the sun was setting on the horizon. All the episodes in the Leaders Commute podcast relate the concept of an evolving context. That is, the knowledge, competencies, and skill sets that we build at various junctures of our careers can give new context and meaning to a particular type of past experience. Let me explain. Immediately after this experience, you might correctly guess that any telling of the story had to end with some egotistical reference to overcoming such dire circumstances. After all, I was able to finish the hike without benefit of a burro or a helicopter, but that was shallow comfort, knowing that the goal was to complete the hike in 10 hours, preferably without any long-lasting damage. After several years and some dilution of my ego, I started to take a different look at that experience. At the end of the hike, having gotten past the immediate challenge, I had a lot of concern about how I would feel the next day. To accommodate the injury, I used every muscle in my body counter to the way I had trained, and I anticipated that a host of other problems would accompany the ankle sprain. But the next morning, I was pleasantly surprised. I had intense pain in my ankle, but the rest of my body held up very well. Looking back, I realized how fortunate I was not to have something worse happen, like a broken leg. I now have a more holistic view of the experience, and it informs much of the work I do with leadership teams who aspire to move more easily between the 3,000-foot view of circumstances and the 30,000-foot view. Mizuta Masahide said, "My barn having burned down, I now have a better view of the moon." My barn had burned down. All the preparations for the hike ended unceremoniously in a spill caused by a rock no bigger than a tennis ball. At first, I viewed this sentiment as a Pollyannish weak rationalization of failure, reinforced by a continual mental rehashing of everything that led to the injury. I came to realize my preoccupation with the circumstances I could no longer change were a product of me clinging to the map I constructed of how I expected things to go. But over the years, as I opened up the map a little more, I came to realize that I have benefited much more from what happened after the injury than before. Intense preparation is familiar to most leadership teams. It's about discipline and putting one foot in front of the other in a relentless drive to a goal. But when things go wrong, changes in perspective are often required to keep moving forward. My change in perspective involved honoring the connectedness of the entirety of my experience. On Christmas Eve 2003, my friends and I agreed to go on a difficult hike in the summer of 2004. I did everything I could to think of to prepare. I injured my ankle. I persisted under difficult circumstances. Looking back, everything I did since that Christmas Eve decision led me to the moment of the accident and to my ability to overcome it. So, was I preparing for the hike or for the accident? Perhaps we can leave that one to the philosophers, but the rest of the story is that in the 20 years since, I have experienced many greater personal and professional challenges and successes than this one. Preparation is not a checklist of tasks, but is a building of a mindset to anchor leadership teams as they embark on important initiatives. My obsession with trying to predict every specific thing that could go wrong was superseded by the mindset that I would be prepared to deal with anything that might go wrong. President Eisenhower said, "Plans are useless, but planning is essential." What brings this quote to life for me are the following. Number one, problems and solutions that are inherently connected evolve at the same time. The key is to minimize the queue time between each of these events. Number two, every decision needs to be made from a systems point of view, with second and third order thinking to mitigate surprises. And number three, leaders must build teams that are comfortable reconciling the tension between the short and long-term view of the most important initiatives of their organizations. And finally, I would like to address the element of time, one different from just looking backwards to get a clearer picture. This is about looking forward and affording time for things to evolve. Several of my projects include working as a fractional executive for private equity groups who need assistance with underperforming assets in their portfolios. Often, directives come in the form of a time-sensitive edict. One such edict was given to me, it being the organization must reach a self-sustaining cash position within 6 months, or we will consider liquidating the investment. Many circumstances contributed to this goal not being achieved. However, some positive trends and the commitment of the leadership gave the private equity group confidence to let the team proceed for a while longer. The goal was finally achieved, but not because the team got smarter or more committed. It was because there was a willingness to look past the numbers and deadlines only and to weigh the likelihood of success with an investment of just a little more time. Thank you for listening. Thanks again for listening. And at this point, I'd like to bring in my colleague, Eric Pratum of Big White Sky. And he is going to help me unpack some things here that are that I think are interesting to cover. And I'll also invite Eric to tell us a little bit about his organization and what he's involved with. So how are you doing, Eric?
Doing well, Jess. Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure. You and I have been interacting a little bit leading up to this day and just kind of talking through what are some of the things we want to maybe emphasize in this discussion. But I'm comfortable just hearing, you know, whatever comes to mind for you, if you have any questions about the accident itself. I mean, I'd love to talk about the accident, but I also like talking about what it taught me. So I was just wondering if you had any thing that you took away that was particularly interesting to you.
Yeah, you know, I think maybe one of the biggest things that sticks out to me is this feeling of similarities to the hero's journey. Mm-hmm. But even without getting into that, one of the questions that occurred to me is I wonder how many other times maybe have you felt like you put together your plans and then dealt with challenges, expected or unexpected, and came out on the other side and recognized some similarities to this experience?
Yeah. So, no, I appreciate that. So I think probably the answer to that, and maybe anyone might answer that, is that there is a challenge in every organization, and maybe you can call it daily or weekly, but it comes. It always comes. And I'm always amazed by the fact that intuitively, most leadership teams understand, okay, you've got to take a bigger view of things. And when you do that, you're going to get perspectives that you might not otherwise have. But that process is like me understanding that it would be a good idea for me to lose 15 pounds. It's a wonderful idea. I know I should do it. I have a lot of ideas and strategies for doing it, but I don't do it. So I think I would say, though, that I have found myself looking back and thinking, all right, there's a better way to look at the situation, and then it's been helpful for me to try and get those things organized in my head, and it helps me push on. How about you? Have you had any similar circumstances that have occurred that are similar?
Yeah, you know, I think I deal with this constantly. I have the best laid plans in my head, like you're saying, whether it's for daily things that might be large or small, or bigger term things that could be considered more like dreams, aspirations, big goals, and things rarely go as planned. And I believe it's in Hamlet. I think the quote is, there's nothing, neither good nor bad, but what the mind makes of it, or something like that. And I find often that when I encounter a challenge, it's like Robert Frost says in A Servant to Servants, the best way out is through. So usually it's, you know, work the situation that you're in, work towards the goal that you had initially set. And naturally, we need to adjust as necessary for whatever circumstances we're dealing with. But ideally, our North Star, our goal, remains the same, whether it's something like dealing with just getting out the door in the morning, or if it's hitting that financial sustainability, scalability goal that you might be dealing with your private equity firm.
You know, as I was relating the story, Eric, there was a couple of things that kept coming to me that they don't make their way into the story because they're not quite as sexy as whatever I put into the story. But when I was, before I got hurt, we did have a person in our party start to struggle with some dehydration, and they were able to kind of resolve that by just handling things properly once they realized what was going wrong. But in the middle of that, you know, I had a lot of concern for him, and I started, this is before I got hurt, I started thinking about, what are we going to do about this situation? What if he doesn't recover? What if he doesn't come around? And then the whole thing became exacerbated because as he was trying to recover from dehydration, and then all of a sudden his boot broke. And I'm thinking, if you're hiking, you should never have a boot break, which makes me think that his preparation level probably wasn't as good as mine. But the thing I really wanted to stress is that my friend Rick, who was really our mentor, said, look, Jess, I know you're worried about him. And, you know, we're not going to leave him out here to die or anything, but I want you to understand that there's a long way to go in this hike. and you're going to have a lot of your own demons to deal with. So if I were you, I would concentrate on just making sure you're doing what you need to kind of survive this hike, and then whatever we got to do for our friend, we'll do it. We'll do it. And I'm thinking that was quite a acute thing that motivated me. It wasn't a interesting perspective. It wasn't anything. He just kind of scared me when he said you're going to have your own demons to deal with. So every once in a while, if I'm in a tough situation and I'm thinking, all right, I'm becoming distracted, I'm thinking about what else I should be doing versus what I should be doing, and then I remember the discussion or the quote that said, you're going to have your own demons to deal with. So I'm wondering, in your practice, do you have any sort of unusual things that inspire you to kind of keep pushing ahead, pushing your team ahead at Big White Sky?
Yeah, you know, we often deal with challenges that are difficult to describe. Typically, people come to us because they recognized that they had a challenge, and often they tried to solve it, but whatever solutions were at hand or that they understood did not solve it. And so then they'll come to us to get some diagnosis, and typically for us to think of maybe a more innovative solution or just a new way of thinking about the challenge. And I find that it is very common for the challenges that groups of people face to be people challenges. And people are complex, individuals are complex, and groups are complex. And even just understanding, you know, do I need to be more focused on the job that I'm doing? Or do I need to be focused on my job perhaps being helping other people? Or are there other ways of thinking about things? Is very complex in and of itself. And that's largely when I'm just thinking about myself. But then when I look to the team, once I can solve some of those issues, and I look to the team, and for you, for example, looking to your hiking partner and having concern, I believe, for both the individual and for the group effort, then we just add layer upon layer of nuance. And yet you still have a goal to achieve, both an individual goal and a group goal. So when I find, both for myself and for people that I'm coaching and for clients that we work with at Big White Sky, that there are challenges that are getting in the way of the goals that we have set, I will often come back to, first of all, what's that North Star? What are we trying to achieve? And then let's dive down to a small level and look at, okay, what's the thing we need to get out of this immediate engagement? I'm a certified coach, for what it's worth. And one of the approaches that I have been taught, and I take it, I use quite frequently in my coaching, is rather than focusing on the big, hairy, audacious goal for today's conversation, let's focus on what do you need to get out of today's conversation, or what do you need to get out of this immediate engagement? And you'd have to tell me, Jess, but I'm guessing when you were concerned about your hiking partners, you know, hydration, about preparation, eventually when you saw his boot, I'm guessing it was probably on your mind, are we even going to be able to finish this thing? When sometimes that question is not nearly as helpful as, what do I need to do to help this guy right now? You know, maybe water, or maybe some fix for his boot, and bringing things back down to what can I do right now while not losing sight of the end goal often helps to provide clarity to get around the immediate roadblocks and get back on the path that we all said we're walking together.
When I was thinking about my friend and his circumstances, and realizing that my level of concern at some point had to give way to the kinds of things I needed to be worried about, it made me think about the fact that early in the podcast, I made a point of saying that as we got more ambitious, that it started to cut away individuals in our group, who all of whom I cared about, but who were less committed to the idea of taking these long trips. It essentially, they were called out of the group, and so what was left aren't people that you liked more. What they were was they were people that were going to see it through the best way they knew how to see it through. And I recognize now that we had maybe the right four individuals to kind of make this journey. It wasn't just my my friend Rick that I'm referring to, but the other two individuals were either serving to remind me that I got to be careful, or they were serving to remind me that the next time I hike the Grand Canyon, I need to be in a lot better shape. And so I think that's an element of trust that's underappreciated in business. There's a book by Stephen Covey called The Speed of Trust that was out several years ago, and it essentially says that there is a slowness to the organization if there is a lack of trust in the organization, and that every metric of however you measure improved trust adds speed to the organization. The other thing I wanted to mention is the reason this title kind of made some sense to me is when I think about high noon, not just because it's the desert and it's bright and it's hot, it's that in preparation, things are fairly well illuminated, right? It's the light from the high noon is what's helping you see, I better get this much water, I better run this far, I better hike this long, I better be ready. And that's important because you're not going to go anywhere unless you take those first steps. And then a full moon, as you back up, is you saying, all right, I got to get past the structure that I built around me for getting through this day and recognize I've got to get through the days that are ahead. And now you've got less illumination, you've got more abstraction, and you have to challenge yourself to try and leverage whatever light you have to see further than you might normally like to see. And so I felt that this title what might be sort of an interesting way to convey that. Eric, tell me, if you don't mind, a little bit about, I think you're a chief operating officer at Big White Sky. Just kind of tell me, what are some of the day-to-day things you have to wrestle with, not necessarily along the lines of what I said in the podcast, but what's happening with your business? What do you specifically tell your customers you're trying to do for them?
Yeah, so Big White Sky is, we sit a bit between a typical agency and the position of a typical agency and a typical consultancy, and not that those are mutually exclusive. But if you imagine a spectrum where on one side, an agency is providing you something that is fairly well defined, I want a website, I want a radio campaign, I want whatever it is. And a consultancy is not necessarily executing work as much as they are doing advising, strategy, research, and so on. Our business was founded nearly 20 years ago with part of the thinking being that not only could we help our clients identify the challenges that they're dealing with and the solutions that were needed, but then also that we could stay with them in order to see the solutions through rather than being one or the other. So we will often have clients and prospects approach us with what they feel is a well-identified challenge. They have a branding challenge, for example, or they have a technology challenge. And it's very common that if we do end up working together, we will find that that might be one of the challenges that they're facing, but there are bigger, different, perhaps more important things that they need to deal with. And I'll give you an example. We had an organization in the healthcare space approach us about a website, and we talked to them about building a new website. But some of the questions that we were asking was, well, who's the audience? What is it that they need to see in order to think of you as the right organization to work with? What's the job that your audience needs to get done? And it turned out after a couple of conversations that it wasn't actually a website that was going to solve their challenge. A better understanding of their audience was the place that they needed to start, because they're doing the job of sales and marketing for their own group. But in order to make their sales and marketing process more reliable, to grow the business, and to make it so that they have a scalable asset, you know, the owners of this business, the people managing it, have a scalable asset, one of the foundational things that they needed was a better understanding of the audience and the audience's job to be done. So we worked with them on that, and that turned into then some leadership consulting, some executive consulting. And eventually, after I think it was a year and a half or so of work together, we finally got around to marketing. We never built them a website. And I think it was another year, maybe two later, the owners, the founders of that business had a successful exit to a larger competitor of theirs. And I use that as a common example because we will build apps, we will rebrand things, we will bring new products to market. We'll do any number of things from research to marketing and so on. But very often what we're talking about with our clients gets down to, do we really understand the situation? Are we all in alignment around what we're trying to accomplish? And then let's build the strategy on top of that.
Yeah, I'd like to tell the audience that you and I have, we became colleagues probably less than a couple of years ago. We were able to meet in a networking event. And it's been nice to interact with you on the various things that I know you're trying to do as a chief operating officer. And so I appreciate your perspectives and insights. I'm going to go ahead and wrap things up by going back to one of the phrases I left in the podcast, which was maybe a key question was whether I was preparing for the hike or whether I was preparing for the accident. And I decided I'm not going to leave that one to the philosophers because I have a strong feeling about this. When you look at things in a more in their entirety, in a more connected way, and you quit separating events in order to try and understand them and discern their intent in the smallest, narrowest view possible, I think that's not helpful for an organization. And so maybe an organization doesn't need to start out by saying, we might have failure, let's start preparing for that. But you can definitely say that failure and success typically go hand in hand, and maybe the only differentiating factor is how much time is happening between those two events and whether something's going to be called a failure or a success. I also want to kind of stress one more thing about the evolving and the affording of time. I mentioned in the podcast that the team, which finally met a goal, wasn't smarter or more committed. It was just time. It's just that the pressures of external investors and the difficulty in really trying to stay focused on a longer view is a big challenge for businesses. And so maybe everybody on the team can't figure out the big picture and the small picture, but the team together needs to understand that they've got to advocate for both those positions. So, Eric, I want to thank you for joining me today, and I want to thank the producers at Radio X. You've been listening to the Leaders Commute podcast. This is the third episode. There'll be nine more episodes, and they're all built along the same line of taking experiences and determining how they're influencing our current modes of leadership and thinking. You can listen to the Leaders Commute anywhere you go to find your favorite podcasts. Thank you very much. This is Jess Villegas. Best regards.